You are now listening to The Real Enneagram, a podcast by the Institute for Conscious Being. To learn more about the Institute and its offerings, visit theicb.info. That's theicb.info. And now, here are your hosts, Dr. Joe Howell and Nanette Moodyum.
Well, welcome back to The Real Enneagram. We're excited today to talk to you this last week of our series on becoming conscious, the Enneagram's Forgotten Passageway. We're going to be looking at and talking about chapter 18 today, which is the flowering of consciousness. Joe, can you just tell me why maybe you summarized this book, or you ended this book rather, in The Flowering of Consciousness?
Sure. Because when we are actually perceiving the world in a different way, we see things and know things that we did not see and know before we became conscious. And becoming conscious is not a terminal thing. It's absolutely continuous. I look at myself when I wrote this book, 10, 12 years ago, and I had become conscious in a way that I really didn't want to become conscious. But the crucible of life, the heat under it, gave me no choice but to wither or to wake up. The death of a child is a horrific, if you experience their illness and go through all of that for several years, and then the unspeakable does happen. That's a lot of heat, and it's enough to blast a parent into infinity. But oddly, I went back to the Enneagram for help. Now, I had been teaching the Enneagram for 20-something years.
Before?
Oh, yes.
The loss of your son.
Yes. And it was beautiful. I really understood it. I understood how the personality became integrated, if it could be more like another personality on the Enneagram. And it's true. But when this experience of losing my son happened, and I went back to the Enneagram just to see it again in light of this death, I saw it in a completely different way. I no longer saw the 9 points as personality types. I understood them as soul types. And that really broke down the boundaries that I had erected for the Enneagram. And not to say I didn't teach it spiritually, because personality integration, you know, if it's done correctly, is a very spiritual process. It's not just psychological, although it can be just psychological. But when I was really looking for truths beyond the truths that I was already comfortable with, but that weren't answering my dilemma anymore, I began to search for a way to live that gave me meaning once more. And the only way that could be done for me, and this is not true for everyone, but for me, and of course my wife too, who shared this lark, was to look at the Enneagram as a way to look at life as being a soul, not a personality. And that what are the inferences of that? And there are many. One is that we are not just our physical bodies, but we are actually invisible souls in a body. And that our souls came into our bodies when our bodies were made. And that if we are souls, part of that soul is still connected to the great God that created the soul. But what is different when you look at life through the lens of the Enneagram of Soul? And the Enneagram of Soul helps us understand that the personality and the ego is going to be fighting mad when anything in this world displeases it.
Mm-hmm.
And it either is going to fight, flight,
mm-hmm.
or shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Those three things aren't necessarily productive if you're trying to learn a different way of living.
Uh-huh.
Because if you're fighting, you're fighting for your own perspective to reign.
Okay.
If you're flying away, you're escaping and things don't change. And if you're shutting down, it's a form of death through paralysis and anesthesia.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the ego as something that is not who we are, that we are not the personality.
Mm-hmm.
We can study the personality if we want to. It's wonderful. There are lots of things about all of these nine personalities. They're just intriguing and, you know.
Yes.
They'll just pull you right in.
Yes.
But if we look at who we are in terms of what our soul characteristics are, those characteristics are not only who we really are, but those characteristics, not our personality, but our soul's characteristics, are what helps us deal with whatever reality sends to us without fighting it, mm-hmm. without flying away,
mm-hmm.
and without shutting down.
Mm-hmm.
And how does the soul do that? The soul understands that the losses and changes to our story, disappointments, betrayals, failures, do not mean the end of our being. They can simply add purpose to our pain by changing our pain into purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And that our lives actually can strengthen and grow and become even more effective when we're living out of the characteristics of our deepest self, our truest nature, our soul, rather than being content to live on the surface of personality characteristics.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This is a game changer.
Yeah.
So once we become conscious and live through the soul instead of the personality, the rest of our lives is, if you could go with me on this, it's the image of a tree that has a bloom on it.
Okay.
And then now many blooms are happening, not all at once, but as we live, more and more blooms happen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We happen to have a magnolia tree in our backyard.
Okay.
And in May every year, there's that first blossom. And you know, magnolia blossoms.
Big, beautiful blossom.
Big, you know, a foot and a half.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes even bigger.
Yeah.
Here in the deep south. And all during May and June, they pop out.
At different times,
mm-hmm. until the whole tree sometimes is white.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that is the way our lives begin to look. Every time we have another insight, another aha, and every time we're more tolerant of something that goes wrong, every time we choose life over death, every time we choose love over criticism, that is another opening. It's another opening of a beautiful flower.
Mm-hmm.
And Eckhart Tolle uses the word flowering of consciousness. And when I first heard that, I just thought, yes, that, you know, I heard that years ago. I said, yes, that's it. That's why the flower is such a good image, because it begins slowly as only a little bud
mm-hmm.
on a stem.
Yes.
A node.
Uh-huh.
And then a bud, and then a little sort of pre-flower. You can almost see the white underneath. the leaves, and then bam, it bursts out one day. And that is very similar to these ahas that I'm talking to you about.
And they don't necessarily all happen at the same time.
And the more you have, the longer you live, the more you have, if you maintain the consciousness of soul.
Okay. You know, not to bring up the negative aspect, but I also think about trees that don't bloom because they're not healthy, and what it takes to make a tree thrive again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like our lives sometimes. I mean, obviously, sometimes it takes work to get those blooms to come again.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
fertilizer.
Yes. Yes. Which we all know about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be a smelly process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's also interesting to me to think that flowering makes me think of unfolding, like a natural process. Like if you have all the right ingredients, nature takes its course in a positive way, that it's not striving or working harder. It's allowing what is already there. It allows what's already there to naturally unfold.
Yes.
And that sounds like a beautiful experience of nature and what we're designed to do. And so here you are enduring the greatest trauma, the greatest crisis any parent or human can honestly ever have. And then yet what was in you unfolded to be able to meet the suffering. Like you didn't know you had this strength or this wisdom or this design on the inside of you, even though you'd been working with the same ingredients like all these years prior. And yet somehow you looked at the Enneagram again and saw what you didn't see before. You manifested what you'd never imagined before. And I find that really interesting. You really are describing that very first stage of consciousness. You call it the dawn of consciousness. And luckily and blessedly for many people, I mean, obviously it doesn't take the death of a child or maybe something so traumatic, but we all do endure some suffering that if we can realize it, if we can wake up to it, we can find purpose in the pain. That is the dawn of consciousness. It's what drew me to this work in the first place. It's why I believe that the divine led me to the Institute for Conscious Being, because I was also looking for a way. I'm tired of the suffering. Then what I think is there is some sort of kind of spiritual momentum that starts to take over. Because you describe this beautiful stages of consciousness, and you talk about early morning consciousness and late morning and noon. And as you go through each one of them, you describe this natural process that also has a spiritual, beautiful spiritual analogy to it. And that's what we're encouraging our students to find, is that they can wake up and they can see something they've never seen before.
Yes. One of the examples, Nanette, just to put some everyday example to this thing about me and the loss that we underwent and the consciousness that we received because of it. I would never have thought that I would be as close to certain people as I am to certain family members. I did not know that other relationships, though they can't fill the shoes of a lost child or children, they can fill a lot of the space in our heart that was vacated. I didn't know that. I had heard of that, but it went by deaf ears, fell on deaf ears. Because I had not experienced anything that would call for inviting a non-family of origin member into my life, into that intimacy. And yet both my wife and I have done that because we have become conscious that love is love.
It doesn't have to be divided by family or nation or tribe.
We did not know that. we thought it had to be our brand of love, and it had to be homegrown, and that it had to be something that we helped to bring about through developing a relationship with a children, mother, brothers, sisters. But we found that love is not restricted.
It's really profound, Joe, because I think that so many of us, even in those, if you would term them nuclear families, we still find so much dissatisfaction in our families. I mean, if we're honest, without death or loss, and we know that we're really not separate from one another, that we're really all connected, and that the more you awaken, the more consciousness you experience, the less separation you experience, you start to realize we're really part of all the same. You and I were recently talking about the pain we feel in the Middle East and really what's happening there.
Yes.
And how tragic it is that these people remain so separate and so unconscious to their brothers and sisters. And how the work, this kind of work, could bring healing. And I can't necessarily, I mean, obviously, the greatest peacemakers of all time have not managed to settle the dispute that is known as the Middle East. But I can start to work on the disputes in my own heart. I can start to think about how I can heal within myself as I wake up. And as I see the people in my own life, whether that's friends or families or coworkers, and recognize that there is love available for me, not only to give, but also to receive. And that's the beauty of waking up, of becoming conscious. Then when we use the Enneagram's forgotten passageway, that the passageway is not to discover a nice little personality and how to make that better and be the best version of myself, but a passageway, honestly, to the truth of who we are, and that that truth has some sort of gift for the earth, just as it did for you, even in your darkest night of the soul, that there was a gift there you didn't know you had.
Right. And more keep coming all of the time.
They keep blooming.
Like for another one is, every time that I see something that I criticize, it automatically comes to me that I did that too. I've done it, or I've thought it, or, and before some of these awarenesses, I would be very apt to sit in judgments. Not that I don't still at times.
Sure.
I'm just this.
You haven't bloomed there yet.
No.
Yeah.
But, and then I even say to myself, don't think that. You should criticize
the inner critic.
Yeah. But in consciousness, we are so aware of the human condition of unconsciousness that when we see it in others, we realize so much of what we're seeing has actually been expressed by ourselves in some way.
Yes. It's assigned to us. We can use it as that. It can be its own form of waking up to what we also are and have been.
Well, that very understanding of the fact that we are like everybody else, we are that too, that really stops projection. And the projection of our shadow on to another human being, or for collectives to cast their shadow on other collectives, or is mass projection. And we see what happens when mass projection is perpetrated on another culture, another people. We saw it when it was projected against Black people in this country, against Native Americans before that. We see it now in Ukraine and Russia, and we see it in the Middle East. What if they were able to say, that's me too? to the collectives that they don't like. That takes consciousness, and it takes collective consciousness. And the only way to get that is through individual awarenesses arising in as many families and communities and states and nations as possible until the world lights up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the Institute for Conscious Being wants to contribute to. And in our own small way, we light people with consciousness and they carry it further. And hopefully one day we won't cast our shadows onto other people, because enough of us will say, no, that's me too.
Mm. That is the point where we dream. We cast that out as a dream that one day we will recognize ourselves and other people. And when we do that, we will learn the lesson, just like Jesus taught, that no greater love has a man than he lay down his life for his friend, that we would start to see ourself in the other, that inclination towards human violence, whether that's physical or mental or spiritual, would actually cease. We'd actually become real peacemakers. I think that is the work that I have experienced in this institute. I've seen the difference that it's made in my own life and in my own families. And I am so hopeful that more students will come to us and that more people will engage with this work in the way that we've understood it and are teaching it and would find the same hope and healing in it that I have. So I really want to thank you for that, Dr. Joe. Thank you for this work that you put into this book, Becoming Consciousness, and how much you lived it out yourself and endured your own suffering in order to give this gift. Thank you for that, truly. So might I ask you to close this podcast series with a prayer?
Surely. I'd be glad to.
Okay.
It is from you, O God, that I ask for the words of this prayer, a prayer that acknowledges that you are our goal, and that when we're caught in egos, we cannot advance. We know that with you, we can be brought to advancement. And we ask for divine help in making our way back to our goal, which is to live out of love, which is the only thing that you and we are made of, essentially. I pray for this world and for every family and every individual, every nation, state, the entire globe, that we can wake up to conscious love of ourselves, each other, and the planet. These babies, we look into their eyes and we see really who we really are. With every baby that is birthed, you show us what innocence is, what honesty is, what joy is, what authenticity and vulnerability are, what unconditional love is. Oh God, allow us to be that way as adults. Bless us and infuse us with your love, that we will wake up and be able to live the life of love. In your name, amen.
Amen.
Hello, podcast listeners. We're glad that you've been with us for this season. And I wanted to thank Nanette Moodyum for doing such an excellent job of moderating these very deep and interesting podcasts that have to do with a huge subject, the spirituality of the Enneagram. We hope you've enjoyed these. With me now is Scott Smith, who's the producer of this entire podcast. Scott, welcome.
Thank you, Joe. It's good to be with you.
And I just wanted to let you speak about what the listeners can expect in this next season and what the schedule is.
We'll be taking a short break, and then we'll be coming back with new episodes later this spring, where we'll begin a series where we discuss the holy ideas and the virtues of each ego type. We'll do one ego type per episode.
Well, thank you, and I can't wait to listen to it myself.
I look forward to it as well, Joe, and thank you to the listeners. While we're on a break, I encourage you to check out our extensive backlog. I've only been producing since October, but this podcast has been in production since 2019. There's a few hundred episodes in that backlog, so there is no shortage of listening material.
Thank you, Scott, and thank you, listeners.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you for listening to The Real Enneagram, a podcast by the Institute for Conscious Being. To learn more about the Institute and its offerings, visit theicb.info. That's theicb.info. The music for today's podcast was composed and performed by ICB faculty member Drexel Rayford.
Thanks for listening today. We hope you liked what you heard. If you did, please subscribe, leave a review, and share this with your friends and family.